A statue of a woman on a pedestal holding a light aloft. Columbia Pictures. Columbia Pictures presents a Martin Ransohoff production, a Richard Marquand film starring Glenn Close and Jeff Bridges. Jagged Edge, with Peter Coyote, Robert Loggia, and John Daner. A view of San Francisco Bridge spanning the bay. Traffic moves steadily along the expansion bridge as daylight fades and darkness settles over the bridge and the city. Stormy waves crash on a rocky promontory where a large, isolated beach house sits. Inside, someone is climbing the stairs. They reach the top. Against an open hallway painted white, a dark shadow falls. Turning the corner, passing by several doors, heading for double doors at the end of the hall. A white gloved hand reaches for the doorknob. A figure all in black, wearing a ski mask, walks quickly through the large bedroom towards the bed of a sleeping young woman. She awakens, a hand goes round her throat, a knife is brandished. The knife is planted in the headboard, the woman straddled, her arms pinned down as the attacker ties her to the headboard.
No! No! Ah! Ah! Oh! No!
The knife is pulled from the headboard and held in front of the victim's eyes, then gripped through the mask and the attacker's teeth. Silk pajamas are ripped open. The knife is lowered to her naked chest. Later, a light goes on in the beach house. A car radio is tuned.
Tales of the brutal slaying of Paige Forrester at the Forrester's Baker Beach weekend retreat are still sketchy. Her husband, John C. Forrester, has been rushed to St. Paul's.
A man stares through the windshield as he passes police cars. A cop stops the car.
District Attorney Krasny.
Yes, sir, Mr. Krasny.
The cop signals him on up the driveway past a number of patrol cars. He runs into a garage.
What are you doing outside?
I needed air. We've got a lot of headlines in there.
Krasny looks at him as they go into the house full of crime personnel. He crosses a spacious, chic living room to approach his assistant DA, Greg Arnold.
It's a forced rear entry window at the back. We're upstairs.
Krasny follows his assistant up the staircase. As they near the top, the assistant takes out a folded handkerchief and wipes the corners of his mouth. He slows down and licks his lips nervously as they approach an open bedroom door. He stops outside and looks pointedly at Krasny as the DA proceeds into the room. An arc of blood drips down the wall. A young Hispanic woman is lifted onto a police stretcher, a mass of blood by her neck. Krasny leaves the room, headed for the master bedroom.
And that's Paige Forrester.
Tied to the bed, chest slashed, bitch scrawled in blood on the wall above her.
Christ.
Krasny turns retching. His assistant follows him downstairs, shaking out a cigarette for him. They pass a detective dusting the banister for fingerprints, then the coroner.
Got multiple stab wounds. The wounds are jagged. The blade must have some kind of serration. I'll know much more tomorrow. The cause of death is obvious.
Where was Forrester?
Over here. He comes in, he gets hit. He blacks out. He comes to and goes upstairs and finds him.
And so what?
The bodies.
Where is he now?
St. Paul's Clinic.
The next morning, reporters wait outside Krasny's office as he pulls up.
Mr. Krasny, was she raped?
Is it a ritual killing?
Were they both stabbed?
We have no comment.
In Krasny's office.
No sign of sperm. No evidence of any real sexual pattern apart from the specific wounds we found on the wife. The knife used was a heavy blade, 6 inches long with a serrated upper edge.
I'm bending a hunting knife. The rope you could buy at any Safeway. There were no prints found except Forrester's, his wife's, and the maid's. The blood on Forrester's clothes was that of the wife's, but not the maid's.
Krasny sits back in his desk chair, holding a Russian nesting doll.
What about his head wound?
No concussion. Some bleeding. Blunt object.
Come on, Al. You know what I'm asking you.
Possibly. Self-inflicted.
The assistant DA.
Got it. Everything was in her name. The corporate stuff, the personal stuff, everything. I mean, she owned the guy. He was an employee, and you know what? He gets it all. Jack Forrester is the direct beneficiary of all of Paige Forrester's corporate and personal assets.
The doll slammed on Paige's photo.
Really think he could have done that to his own wife?
What the hell is that, Al? You murder your wife to take all the money? That is the oldest crime in the world. Only you're real smart. So you make it look like some fucking Charlie Manson did it. You want people to say, Jesus, you think he could have done that to his own wife?
Krasny leans back in his chair, hands behind his head.
If I was going to kill my wife, that's the way I'd do it.
Mr. Forrester, why didn't you go out to the beach house with your wife?
I had dinner at the Union Club, and then I went back to the paper and checked on the Sunday editorials.
You don't write those yourself, do you? I didn't think editors wrote their own editorial.
Sometimes they do.
Did you write the ones about me?
Yes, I insisted on writing. Is that relevant here? The editorials that I wrote on Mr. Krasny?
I was just going to object to that.
Objection sustained. I was just curious, that's all.
The funeral.
Paige was a woman of great generosity and compassion. I think the thing I'll miss about my sister the most is her great sense of resolve. Paige always did whatever she set out to do. I'll miss her more than I know how to say. Thank you.
He steps down and walks to Paige's husband, Jack, whose head is bandaged, hugging him. A man at the back signals to Jack.
Nice service.
He moves through the mourners to the man standing beside his attorney.
Krasny.
Now?
The man nods solemnly.
Ride my ass into the Senate.
Jack, he can't do that. You're innocent.
The fuck he can't.
Jack, alone on a yacht in San Francisco Bay Harbor, the bridge just visible through the mist, opens a gold-colored urn. Stern-faced, he peers through the sunglasses into the urn. He takes off his glasses and continues to look inside. Finally, he puts his glasses down, reaches his hand into the urn, and scatters ashes over the side of the boat into the bay. He tips the urn up, emptying it into the bay. He watches the water. He stows the empty urn in a box and takes two long-stemmed red roses, sniffing one. He tosses them into the water. Krasny enters an office where Frank is interrogating Jack Forrester.
Look, you've been coming to
coming here for weeks now, putting the best apples on top of the barrel. Whatever I taste, I'm not buying it. You say you were happy. You ever argued?
Look,
any problems?
We've been over this and over this.
And we're going to go over it again and again and again.
Frank, there's no need to badger you, Mr. Forrester. Right, Counselor?
A later interrogation.
You know, Mr. Forrester, I'm not trying to get you to admit you whacked your wife around on a daily basis. But I want to know if you ever argued.
I never said we didn't have arguments.
Oh, so you argued.
What did you argue about? I told you we had the usual arguments. We were married.
Arnold needs to speak to you, sir.
Oh, I thought you had the only perfect marriage in the state of California.
Elsewhere.
Okay, that's fine, Mr. Fabrizi, but let's get back to the bit about the lockers.
The club gives me a pass key, you know, so I go through them. The members, they don't even know I've been in there. I seen all their stuff, their rubbers and everything.
Krasny comes in.
So, that's when I saw it.
The knife?
Yeah, the knife.
Well, when did you see it?
When? Oh, it was right after New Year's last year, yeah. You see, because they like me to go in there at the beginning of the year and clean them out, you know. Start the year off with clean assholes, right? Excuse me.
They let you clean out private lockers?
Oh, sure. They trust me. I've been working for them for 20 years.
Mr. Fabrizi, what kind of knife did you see?
A hunting knife, about 6 inches long with a jag on the edge.
How'd you know it was Forrester's locker?
Well, because it was numbered 122, and that's his number. Because right after I saw it, I thought to myself, geez, I didn't know Mr. Forrester was a hunter. So it kind of made me feel good, you know, that he was a hunter, you know what I mean?
Krasny stares.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
At the interrogation.
I'm tired of this, Andrew.
Look, admit it. She owned you.
Oh, I'm getting tired of this.
We're all getting tired of it, Mr. Forrester. We've been doing this too long.
I have no quarrel with the financial structure of the company.
Tom Krasny and Greg Arnold enter. Krasny, casually holding a cigar, walks straight to Jack.
Do you hunt, Mr. Forrester?
What?
Have you ever been hunting?
No.
Do you own a hunting knife?
No.
What the fuck is going on?
Have you ever been in possession of a hunting knife?
No.
I'm giving you a chance to cop a plea.
Jack stares at him, then stands up, smiling.
You think I killed my wife? Prove it.
They stand face to face.
You're under arrest for the murders of Paige Forrester and Consuela Martinez. Frank, read him his rights.
Handcuffs.
You have the right to remain silent. If you give up that right to remain silent, anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law.
Your Honor, Mr. Forrester is the editor of the San Francisco Times and the president of the Times Lofton Publishing Company.
He is, however, charged with two capital offense felonies.
But, Your Honor, the charges are based purely on circumstantial evidence.
Mr. Forrester has no prior criminal record. I don't expect him to flee the jurisdiction.
Fine. Then set bail of $500,000 will stand.
Jack's colleague.
Made some calls back east. I'm going to get you a heavy hitter.
I don't want anybody from out of town, Andrew. I don't want to contribute to the goddamn circus.
Krasny watches him.
Your firm has got to handle it.
Jack, we're corporate lawyers. We can barely handle a hearing.
Jack, got something for us?
So what do you think?
I'm innocent. That's all I can really say.
Well, what do you think about Krasny?
No, we have no further comment.
Come on, Jack. Doesn't this have something to do with the Senate race?
No further comment.
Well, look, my paper has been critical of Mr. Krasny's conduct as district attorney. That's no secret. He's an ambitious guy. He's got big political aspirations, so I guess you can draw your own conclusions. Excuse me.
Thank you, Jack.
No comments at this time, please, folks. This is going to be a show trial, for God's sakes. We have only got one person who's ever had any criminal experience.
Who is he?
She, and she hasn't practiced criminal law for 4 years.
Jack rejects a mic.
She any good?
Oh, yes, she was a very good prosecutor. She worked for Krasny.
She's interviewed.
Well, Teddy, are you familiar with the Jack Forrester case?
I go out of my way not to be familiar with criminal cases.
Jack Forrester would like to speak to you about representing him.
I'm in the middle of a case, Andrew.
I think whatever the case is, it can wait, don't you, Andrew?
Oh, yes. Teddy?
There is nothing in the world that will make me go back to criminal work, Andrew. You know the decision I made.
There is nothing in the world I personally would like less than to lose Jack Forrester as a client.
Teddy, you know the affection that I've always had for you. And you know that nothing would please me more than one day being able to speak to you as one of my partners. So please, do an old man a personal kindness. Speak to him.
Teddy pulls up to Jack's gates in her station wagon with her two kids in the car.
Joe Montana?
I told you. A guy called Jack Forrester.
He killed his wife. I saw it on TV.
He allegedly killed his wife.
That means he's gonna get away with it.
So, how do I look?
Weird.
She pulls into the now open gates and follows a winding road to the house.
Good morning, madam.
Good morning.
Mr. Forrester is expecting you.
She follows the butler.
I agree, Carl, but the murders, they happened over 2 months ago, and there's no leads because Krasny's locked into me. Excuse me, I'll be right with you.
Jack's on the phone.
Look, I'll tell you guys what I'm going to do at the meeting.
Jack watches Teddy closely.
All right, listen, I've got to go. I'll be home all evening, so if you need me, you can catch me here.
Teddy looks at photos on a piano.
Hello.
Hello.
Glad you came.
Nice to meet you.
Nice meeting you. We met at a party 5 or 6 years ago. You probably don't remember. Said you like horses.
Yeah, very much.
Come on.
He opens a French door and they go outside.
Andrew spoke to you?
Yes, he did.
And?
And the problem is I just don't do criminal work anymore.
Yes, I know. You told me. I was hoping you'd reconsider.
They cross a wooden bridge.
I didn't kill my wife.
I didn't ask you if you did.
Well, if you represented me, you would.
I'd ask about the case they had against you. I want to win my case.
Did you win all your cases when you were a prosecutor?
Yes, I won every one. Is that why you wanted me to represent you?
Yes, and because you're a woman, and because you're good. You know what Krasny's capable of. Thanks, Karen.
They climb steps to a corral where a female groom uncovers a beautiful white horse.
All right, let's show her what you got. Come on.
Teddy steps back.
I love this beauty. It was Paige's pride and joy.
She smiles, watching man and horse.
Isn't he beautiful?
Teddy draws nearer.
The oldest equine species, the most beautiful, perfectly tempered.
Makes men imperious to sit on a horse.
Oliver Wendell Holmes, right? Well, he was wrong. Look at his legs. Shows how vulnerable we all are.
She watches him at an editorial meeting at Jack's newspaper.
What's this lead Krasny we're running Sunday?
It's a profile. Reviews his career, looks at the Senate race.
The Senate race is 9 months away.
I just thought now would be...
Look, folks, I don't want any slant, any bias on our coverage of my case or of Krasny. You hear me? I put my nuts into this paper for 15 years. I want routine objective coverage. I'm going to be taking a leave of absence until my trial's over. Carl's going to be running things.
An older man nods.
I'm going to miss you. Thank you.
As the staff leave his office, Jack presses a button and a curtain slowly opens, revealing the inner workings of a newspaper, the presses and conveyor belts. Carl stands by the window with him.
You know how much I'm going to miss these goddamn machines?
He pats Carl's shoulder. In a bar, Greg signals Krasny as he sees Teddy come in.
Good evening, Mrs. Barnes. Good evening. Is Mr. Barnes here?
Yes. The hostess indicates a table.
Hi.
Sorry I'm late. Ah, you went to the zoo.
He pecks her cheek.
David's been after me for weeks.
Damn, I was going to take him to the zoo next weekend.
Oh.
Oh, well, we'll just do something else.
Krasny approaches.
Ah, starving.
Did I hear something about you in the Forrester case?
She stares at him.
You heard wrong. Matthew, remember Tom Krasny?
Tom waves his drink.
May I?
They exchange a look as he sits.
I think you should take the case. Think of the fun we'll have.
Wouldn't be any fun.
Maybe you're right. Too bad about Stiles.
What?
He looks up, surprised.
You remember Henry Stiles? He's dead?
She stares, shocked.
What?
I'm sorry. You didn't know. He hanged himself.
When?
Day before yesterday. I don't know how you figure it. Teddy and I sent this guy to the joint 4 years ago.
He's halfway to his parole hearing. He hangs himself.
Teddy's lips part and she continues to stare.
You take care.
He gets up and leaves her staring. Matthew looks at her with concern, but her stare remains unbroken. Later, Matthew bends over and, touching his son's head, kisses him. Moving to his daughter, he repeats the gestures, pulling up her blanket with care. Then he stands and walks towards Teddy, who's been watching. Holding her arms, he goes to kiss Teddy. She lowers her face.
Good night.
Matthew stands awkwardly in the bedroom, looking at his sleeping children. The next morning, at Teddy's.
When's Bridget gonna be back?
Bridget is coming. She's coming back tomorrow.
What's for dinner?
Oh, I don't know. What do you want? I'll cook you anything.
Oh, God, Mom, you can't cook. Either can Bridget.
Oh, yes, she can. I thought you liked Bridget.
She farts too much.
Well, so do you.
At least not Adam's mom's.
Did you finish your homework?
Yes. Was Dad here last night?
Mm-hmm.
He was? Why didn't he wake us?
He kissed you when you were asleep.
Bye, Mom.
Bye-bye, honey.
Her son runs out the door. Teddy follows.
David. David!
She runs down the front steps of her house, holding her dressing gown closed.
Can I have my kiss?
They hug.
Tell him to wake me next time.
I will.
Bye, Mom.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
She stands watching as her children run down the sidewalk. Later, with a cup of coffee, she reads Forrester's paper, the San Francisco Dispatch. One item in the obituary column reads, Stiles Henry Jackson, in Vacaville, California, beloved son of Elizabeth Stiles of San Francisco, brother James of Oakland, sister Harriet of Vallejo. Funeral details are noted. At the funeral, as black men carry a casket out of a church, two women follow. The older woman, obviously distraught, sees Teddy, who's standing by herself, and approaches her.
Mrs. Stiles.
You have no place here.
Mrs. Stiles leaves. Teddy takes a deep breath. Later, she climbs the steep steps of a clapboard house near the harbor. A sign hangs in the window saying an apartment is for rent. Teddy presses a bell in the peeling white paint, then knocks. While she waits for a response, Teddy looks out over the noisy harbor area before knocking again. She smiles and backs away from the door. A balding man in an open shirt.
Christ. Oh. You're looking a real bride. Come on.
They hug warmly.
Good to see you. Come on. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She sits on his sofa.
Eddie, I'm a busted tire, for Christ's sake. Lungs are shot. Can't even piss straight.
You were the best investigator the DA's office ever had.
A long time ago.
4 years.
I know the fuck how long ago it was.
He hands her a can of beer.
Henry Stiles. Dumb fucking asshole. He hanged himself.
I know.
Yeah, I know you know. You're here, aren't you? Forrester isn't Stiles, right?
She smiles.
Let's say the son of a bitch didn't do it. You're never going to get him off.
If he didn't do it, I'll get him off.
Come on. Why don't you stop the horse shit, Teddy? Look, I don't give a flying fuck how much money he's got. A rich guy like Forrester, where the hell is he going to find a jury of his peers, huh? He's going to get a bunch of people who hate him for what he's got.
If he didn't do it, I'll get him off.
Forget Stiles, will you? Forget him. You're going to eat yourself up alive with all that guilt you got inside.
I can't forget him, Sam, and neither can you.
The fuck I can't!
Sam, I'm responsible, and so are you.
That's who I am! Tom Krasny is responsible! And fuck Stiles,
and fuck you and your goddamn guilt.
She smiles. Later, Teddy and Sam with Jack Forrester and Andrew.
I'll take the case on one condition. If you lie to me, if I think you're guilty, I'm going to drop out.
Well, it's not a professional attitude and you know it.
I have no problem with that. I'm not going to lie to you.
Okay.
She glances at Sam and her notes.
I want Sam to have access to all your personal and corporate correspondence, your financial records, your wife's records, everything, absolute access.
You got it.
We've got almost 4 months till the trial. I don't want you out in public. I don't want to see any pictures of you in the paper. I want you to look as though your life has been shattered.
My life has been shattered.
Andrew, I don't want any visible support from the firm unless I ask for it. I want to sit at that table alone, not with a team of high-priced lawyers. The jury will like that.
Sam grins appreciatively.
I like her.
Yeah, she pisses me off.
Nice to meet you. Very happy.
See you tomorrow.
He shakes with Teddy.
Andrew?
Be back in a moment.
Teddy leans on Sam's shoulder.
So, what do you think?
What the fuck do I know?
Did your mother ever wash your mouth out with soap and water?
Yeah, but it didn't do any fucking good. What if he passes the polygraph test? How are you gonna know if he's lying to you?
I'll know.
Teddy, a guy like him, you never know.
Teddy and Krasny.
I'm representing Jack Forrester.
Is he finally gonna cop a plea?
He wets the end of his cigar.
Go ahead, I'm a reasonable man. I'll listen.
I don't want any problems with discovery.
I don't know what you're talking about.
She eyes him.
If you hold anything back on me, Tom, I'm gonna bust your ass wide open.
You talk to your corporate clients this way?
I mean it, Tom. It is unprofessional conduct for a prosecutor to fail to disclose to the defense at the earliest feasible...
I know the words, Teddy.
I'm not gonna let it happen again.
You prosecuted the Stiles case with me, and you did a good job. The jury found him guilty. He had a rap sheet as long as my dick.
He lights his cigar.
I'm gonna nail you to the wall.
I'll see you in court, counselor.
At the Forrester's beach house. Teddy follows Jack up the staircase in the now deserted house as he relives the night of the murders. Jack stops, staring at the bedroom doors.
Consuela. Consuela's door was open.
What could you see?
Blood.
The room is empty and clean now.
I ran to our room.
Was the door closed? Open it.
He looks at her, his face contorted with dread. This room, too, is empty except for the bed and clean. Teddy watches him closely as they go in.
I can't.
What did you see?
He looks down, away from the bed.
That word on the wall.
Teddy's eyes scan the room.
And the rope, her hands and her feet were tied. There's blood all around her breast, all over the bed.
He looks at the bed.
She didn't have any clothes on. Between her legs, the blood. Oh, God.
He staggers to the bed and leans on it as Teddy watches. He turns, looking anguished, almost angry, as he runs past Teddy out of the room. She swallows, shaken. Later, they sit in the spacious living room, its furniture covered.
How did you meet her?
I met at Stanford. I met at this party. I didn't even know her name. I'm glad I didn't. I never would have had the nerve to talk to her. And then a couple of years later, we ran into each other at the country club. I wasn't a member, but I used to go in and use their pool every once in a while. And we got married. Started working for the paper.
used to bring coffee around to everybody. I hated that shit. Worked in advertising circulation. Got to know everything about the company. Her father liked me.
Teddy walks to the glass door, looking out towards the Pacific Ocean.
Why didn't you ever have any children?
God, that's the biggest mistake we ever made.
Later on the beach.
Were you faithful to her?
You know how many times Krasny asked me that? Yes, I was faithful to her. Except for a short period a long time ago.
Teddy stops walking.
Wasn't even an affair, really. It was like a series of one-night stands. Girl went back to France. Didn't even last a month.
You'll have to tell me all about her.
Yeah, I'll send you all the details. Times, dates, restaurants. You want the motel room numbers? I may have forgotten those. You're divorced, aren't you?
Yeah.
Were you faithful to him?
She nods.
Really?
Really? Was she faithful to you?
Yeah, as far as I know.
What does that mean?
It means as far as I know. I didn't kill her.
I know you didn't.
No, you don't. You just want to get closer to have a better look.
That night in bed, Teddy studies gruesome police photos of Paige and Consuela. Her daughter.
What you doing, Mom?
Oh, homework. Nothing much. I could sure use a hug, though.
She climbs on Teddy's bed and they hug.
Oh, you're such a good hugger.
Really?
Really.
They hug again, and Teddy gently tucks her daughter's hair back.
Mom?
What?
Do you ever think about boys and all that stuff?
Sometimes.
Do you ever think about it with Dad? Mom, I liked it when Dad was here the other night. I miss him, Mom.
They embrace again. The next day, Teddy studies a polygraph printout with an expert.
Give me the bottom line, Dan.
The bottom line? A straight, solid graph. The machine loves him. He's telling the truth. Or he's the kind of ice cube even the machine can't melt.
Another expert.
Is he psychopathic? No. But he's manipulative. He didn't get where he is without being manipulative. Neither did I, neither did you. But did he do that bloodbath? I don't know. But if you're asking me whether I think he's capable of doing that, well, I saw nothing that would lead me to that conclusion.
Sam, come on in. Thank you, Doctor. I'll call you later.
Sure.
All right. I've got 832 pages, signed, sealed, and delivered by Thomas Krasny, Esquire, The People versus John C. Forrester.
It really took Krasny 2 months to put this together?
Christ's sake, Teddy, he's got him tied to that fucking knife.
No, he doesn't. He has a janitor who claims to have seen a knife in the locker.
Next best thing, isn't it?
Nope, not good enough. Circumstantial. Krasny doesn't have the knife that killed Forrester's wife. The janitor isn't identifying it.
What about this friend of his wife's, this Virginia Howell?
It's hearsay coming from one witness, Sam. Kathy, would you get Mr. Forrester on the phone for me, please? Thank you.
Krasny's too smart. Holding something back, that son of a bitch has got to have more.
Teddy, I gotta tell you. I've been watching this guy for months now. The
You want to know what I think? What I really think?
What do you think?
He killed her.
Later, Teddy visits Jack.
Hi. He's got a witness who said he saw a hunting knife in your locker at the country club.
I figure something like that's complete bullshit.
May I use your phone?
Yeah.
He described it. He said it was 6 inches long.
I never had any kind of knife in my locker.
Why would he be lying?
All I can tell you is it never happened.
He smiles confidently. Later, over dinner...
Did you always want to be a lawyer?
I always wanted to be a prosecutor. My dad was a cop.
What'd I get myself into? You want some more of this?
No.
They're sharing a Chinese takeaway meal.
You're a very pretty lady.
Teddy looks at him.
I don't know what she thinks. Maybe he did do it. It's not like he's coming on to me.
You like to play games, don't you?
Racquetball, I play every day.
I used to play years ago.
No, we should play. You look like you're still in shape.
I don't play games with my clients.
Yeah, you do.
Tell me about Virginia Howe.
She takes out her pad and pen.
She's a real bitch.
She says your wife told her she was going to divorce you.
We can blow her right out of the water.
How?
You got some coffee?
Yeah. When you come back, I want to know exactly how.
When I come back, I'll tell you exactly how.
Teddy watches him leave, stroking her cheek thoughtfully with the pen. Later, Teddy calls on Mr. Fabrizi at the country club.
Hello, Mr. Fabrizi. Teddy Barnes.
He gives her a once-over with his eyes. Later, they look at Jack's locker.
How do you know it was this locker?
Because right after I saw it, I put it together that it was Mr. Forrester's, and it stuck in my head that he had it.
Teddy walks to the next row of lockers, then back to Fabrizi.
Is there any possibility that it wasn't this locker?
Lady, listen. I like Mr. Forrester. I wish to Christ I'd never seen the damn thing. Now, you ask me if I think Mr. Forrester killed his wife. I say, Jesus Christ, no way. No way Mr. Forrester would ever do a thing like that. But, lady, you ask me if the knife I saw was in the locker here. I say, hell yes, the son of a bitch was right up there.
The judge addresses Teddy and Krasny.
I'm telling you now, I see this trial degenerating, and I'll hit you like a freight train roaring down the High Sierra. We've got a man's life at stake here. Not headlines, not careers. Either one of you have anything you want to share with me?
No, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm not satisfied that the prosecution is fully complying with its discovery obligations, Your Honor.
I have complied, Your Honor.
Do you have any evidence Mr. Krasny has not complied with his discovery obligations?
No, Your Honor.
Then what do you base your allegation on?
On my past association with Mr. Krasny, Your Honor.
Cite the case. I held something back? Cite the case, Teddy.
I hope I don't have to say this to you again, Mrs. Barnes, but you don't question ethics in my chamber unless you have the evidence to support you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Later.
Why didn't you cite the case, Teddy? You could have gotten disbarred before the trial.
Do you realize how much I admired you?
Never got me anywhere with you, did it?
She starts to leave.
What about Forrester? You like him any better?
Yeah. I like him a lot better.
Why don't you cite the case? Put it all on the line. The People versus Henry Stiles. Case number 26022.
He walks away from Teddy. She stares after him, her expression concerned. Later, Teddy and Jack on horseback.
You got me! Come on! You can catch me! Watch out!
His horse jumps a fallen tree. Teddy follows, but her horse balks at a second tree.
You can do it!
I'm not sure I want to.
Yes, you do! Come on!
He re-jumps the tree.
Hey!
She jumps and he follows.
I'm getting you now! Good.
At Jack's.
Well, you ride very well.
Thank you. That was wonderful. I loved it.
You're not going anywhere.
They dismount.
You left your lights on. I'll get a jumper.
Why don't you just take me home?
He stops short, turns, and walks back to her. They kiss. Later, in Teddy's living room, they kiss again.
First time I saw you, I wondered. You did too, didn't you?
No.
You liar.
They kiss again. Teddy's little boy comes downstairs.
David. Sorry.
He runs back up.
Good night.
They share one last kiss before Jack leaves, reluctantly, tapping his thighs in frustration. He opens the door, then turns back to her, both smiling.
Night.
Next day, in her office.
You got another one of these crank letters today. Hello?
Hi, Teddy.
Matthew.
David called from school. He was a little upset.
Come on, Matthew, nothing happened.
That's not what David said.
I mean, it's just so difficult. If I like someone, I'd like to be able to invite him home.
I'll talk to David when they come this weekend. Man to man.
Thanks. Bye.
She picks up the letter again, studying it carefully. It's typed and reads, "He is innocent, Santa Cruz." The T's are all above the line. As she reads, Sam enters.
Hi.
Hi.
Got another one.
Yeah? Well, the T's slightly raised.
Yeah. Yeah, the last one analyzed. Told me it was typed in a 1942 Corona. It's a big help, isn't it?
How are you doing with the knife?
Striking out, that's what I'm doing. How are you doing with our killer?
I like him.
You like him? You want you to like him. Because the more you like him, the harder you'll work to beat the rap against him.
I know that, Sam.
I'm just reminding you, sweetheart.
Teddy and Jack play racquetball. They emerge from a lift, sweaty from the game. Jack pulls her towel from round her neck, then grabs her, pulling her close. They kiss.
I can't.
Let go.
I can't.
They continue to kiss. Teddy at first resists him, then she returns his passion. Later, in bed naked, she rolls on top of Jack as he grips her blonde hair. They move together, then roll again until Jack's on top. The next morning, Jack awakens to find Teddy on the phone.
I'm at a friend's house. Jen, I gotta go, all right, darling? Okay, I love you too. Bye-bye.
She walks through Jack's house holding a black dressing gown closed. As she stoops to pick something up in the bedroom, a curtain opens, revealing the city below. Surprised, she turns to Jack, still lying in bed.
I make a great Denver omelet.
I have to go.
I know.
Look, I hope you don't think...
It's okay, Teddy.
He holds out a hand and she goes to the bed and sits down by him, looking at him closely.
I want you to sit close to me in court tomorrow. I think you should help me carry my things. Might as well take advantage of the fact that a woman is defending you. The jury's going to be watching every move that we make, so body language is really important.
He reaches for her hand and kisses it. She's drawn to him and leans down, kissing him. Suddenly, she breaks away.
Wear a blue suit. Juries like blue suits.
They laugh together.
Anything else?
Later, they climb subway steps and look across the street to reporters waiting outside the courthouse. They cross and are mobbed as they go inside.
County of San Francisco is now in session. The Honorable Clark Kerrigan presiding.
Krasny's opening statement to the jury.
The facts in this case are simple. The people will prove that on the night of June 12th of this year, the defendant, John C. Forrester, brutally murdered his wife and his wife's maid. The murders were in cold blood, with malice aforethought. And he did it out of lust and greed. His greed for money and his lust for power.
Jack frowns.
And finally, the people will prove that John C. Forrester was in fact living a lie. That behind the facade of all the dinners and all the charity events that he and his wife attended, their marriage was crumbling. The people will prove that if Paige Forrester would have divorced him, it would have meant the end of his prestigious career, the end, in fact, of his livelihood. We will prove that at the time of her death, her brutal murder, Paige Forrester was contemplating divorce. Thank you for your attention.
Ms. Barnes, you wish to make your statement now?
Yes, Your Honor.
Teddy leaves the table where she is sitting with Jack, who looks upset by Tom's opening comments. She crosses the courtroom to the jury, passing Tom on the way.
John Forrester did not murder his wife. He did not murder his wife's maid. He is an innocent man unjustly accused.
She looks closely at the jury, then returns to her seat. Jack rises briefly as she sits down.
You may call your first witness.
Paige Forrester's brother.
My sister directly owned 20% of the 8 million shares outstanding. The shares were in her name. She had absolute control. Jack had less than 1% of the shares in his name.
Mr. Laughlin, could you tell us the provisions of your sister's will?
Jack Forrester is the direct beneficiary of all my sister's assets.
All of it? Corporate and personal assets?
Yes.
Mr. Laughlin, did your sister ever express any dissatisfaction to you about Jack Forrester's administration of the company?
No, she was very pleased with Jack's helmsmanship.
Did she ever express any dissatisfaction to you about her personal relationship with her husband?
No.
Never?
Never.
Mr. Laughlin, do you think Jack Forrester killed your sister?
God, no.
Objection. I move to strike that from the record, Your Honor.
Granted. Jury, you will please ignore the last remark.
The people call Mrs. Virginia Howell.
A beautiful woman with red manicured nails wearing a fur coat is called. Teddy watches her intently.
Mrs. Howell, describe your relationship with Paige Forrester, please.
Well, we were like sisters.
What did she say about her relationship with her husband?
Objection, Your Honor. It calls for hearsay.
Your Honor, this testimony is being offered to show the state of mind of Paige Forrester. Therefore, it's an exception to the hearsay rule.
Mr. Krasny has shown no connection between the state of mind of Mrs. Forrester and my client and the charges in this case.
I'll allow it, subject to connection to Mr. Forrester.
Now, Mrs. Howell, what did Paige Forrester say about her relationship with her husband?
She knew that he didn't love her, and she was sure that he was seeing someone else.
And did she tell you anything else?
She was going to tell her husband that she wanted a divorce.
I will tolerate no further disruptions in this courtroom.
Mrs. Howe, when was the last time you saw Mrs. Forrester at her home? At her home? I really don't remember. Wasn't it about the same time she stopped playing tennis with you at the club? No, we played together all the time.
She's bluffing.
Isn't it true, Mrs. Howell, that 6 months before her death, Paige Forrester broke all contact with you? No, we spoke together on the telephone, and we'd see each other at the club. Mrs. Howell, you find Jack Forrester an attractive man, don't you?
Virginia Howell glances at Jack, then blinks her eyes.
What do you mean? Isn't it true, Mrs. Howell, that Paige Forrester broke all contact with you? Because she learned you were trying to seduce her husband? That's not true. You're under oath.
Objection. Badgering the witness, Your Honor.
Motion denied.
Isn't it true, Mrs. Howell, that during the week of December 7th, 1984, you called Jack Forrester at his office on 8 separate occasions? I don't remember that. Let me refresh your memory. December 7th, 9:40 a.m. and 4:23 p.m. December 8th, 10:15 a.m. and 3:45 p.m. Would you like me to read the list to you, Mrs. Howell?
Jesus Christ, how did you miss this?
Tom, she came to us. How was I supposed to know?
Did you ever write to Mr. Forrester?
Krasny waits nervously.
No. No? No.
Teddy takes a paper off her table, shows it to Krasny, and walks to the witness with it.
Is this note in your handwriting, Mrs. Howell?
Virginia Howell looks at Teddy, then arches an eyebrow and stares at Jack, who looks away.
Yes. Your Honor, I ask that this be marked as Defense Exhibit A and admitted into evidence. Mrs. Howell, did you send this note to Jack Forrester? Yes, I suppose so. Will you read it, please?
Virginia Howell looks ill.
Dear Jack, I've been trying to reach you all week. I'll be at the canyon in Palm Springs. Wouldn't it be fun if you came down? Isn't it silly to keep avoiding me? Paige, we'll never know. How is it signed, Mrs. Howell? Love, Ginny.
Virginia shuts her eyes for a long moment.
Your Honor, may I show this to the jury?
As Teddy hands the letter to the jury, Virginia Howell and Jack exchange a long look, Jack looking away first.
Mrs. Howell, did Mr. Forrester meet you in Palm Springs?
No.
Did he meet you anytime, anywhere?
No.
What did he do with your note, Mrs. Howell?
I really don't know.
He gave it to his wife, didn't he?
I don't know. Why don't you ask her?
Mrs. Howell, did Mrs. Forrester, to your knowledge, begin divorce proceedings against her husband?
No.
No further questions, Your Honor.
Teddy retrieves Howell's note from the jury, then strides to her table. Jack rises and puts an arm around her, and they clasp hands, smiling.
How was I supposed to find out, Tom? Only the two of them knew.
Later, Teddy works on the case at home. David comes in.
Mom, I don't understand this.
Honey, why don't you go ask Jenny?
I don't want to ask Jenny.
David, I have a trial tomorrow.
Okay? I've got a test tomorrow.
Honestly, David.
You don't care. Forget it. I hope he did. I hope he's guilty.
Oh, David, honey. Come here. David, honey, come on. I didn't...
As he runs upstairs, Sam comes in.
Teddy, come here. The tennis pro at the club, a guy named Slade. Bobby Slade. Talked to the bartender at the club. 2 weeks ago, he drops out of sight when a couple of guys from the DA's office come to see him. You gotta figure Krasny's gonna spring him on us.
What do you have on him?
Just that he worked up and down the coast in all the clubs. We got La Jolla, Laguna, Newport Beach, Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz?
Yeah. And I talked to 183 goddamn club members about that knife. You know what I get? Not a zilch. I told you, you're dreaming.
What about former club members? People who quit after January of last year.
Come on, Teddy, that's a wild goose chase.
Sam, he didn't do it.
Yeah? Is that your head talking or another part of your anatomy?
She bristles.
Hey, okay, what the hell? Fuck me.
You may call your next witness.
People call Eileen Avery, Your Honor.
Who's she?
Jack looks over his shoulder.
Your Honor, may counsel approach the bench?
Taking some papers, Teddy speaks to the judge as Krasny listens and a young woman is led into court.
This witness was not mentioned in the discovery material, Your Honor. I told you in chambers that the prosecution was not complying with...
Your Honor, she's a reluctant witness. She was served a subpoena last night on the basis of information we uncovered yesterday afternoon.
Bullshit.
Ms. Barnes.
I want it on the record, Your Honor.
I'll be happy to put it on the record.
Do you really think that's going to hold up an appeal?
What appeal? You don't expect to lose, do you? Here's the subpoena, Your Honor.
I will allow her testimony. Put the circumstances of the subpoena on the record.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Let's continue.
Let the record show that Miss Eileen Avery is a reluctant witness. She was subpoenaed last evening on the basis of information uncovered yesterday afternoon.
Who is she?
Raise your right hand, please.
A friend.
What do you mean, a friend?
A friend. That's all she is.
State your name, please.
Eileen Avery.
How old are you?
I'm 26.
What's your relationship to John C. Forrester?
The beautiful young woman glances at Jack.
He's a friend of mine.
Between July and December 1983, what was your relationship to him?
Teddy looks anxious.
He was my lover.
Jack shuts his eyes and shakes his head. Teddy is shocked.
You had an affair with him for 6 months, 2 years ago?
Tears stand in Teddy's eyes. Jack looks resigned as the girl reluctantly nods.
Answer the question, please.
Yes, I did.
You were in love with him?
Yes, I was.
And he was in love with you?
Yes.
Did Mr. Forrester ever speak to you about divorcing his wife?
Jack frowns painfully. Tears stream down the girl's face.
Please, Miss Avery.
He said he wanted to.
Yes?
He said he could never do it.
And why could he never do it?
Because he said he would lose everything he had always worked for.
Jack looks down. Teddy covers her mouth, eyes wide.
Your witness, Mrs. Barnes.
No questions.
Thank you, Miss Avery. You may step down.
Miss Avery leaves the witness box, looking at Jack on the way.
People call Robert Slade.
Teddy covers her face with her hand. Jack, too, looks defeated. Teddy watches closely as a young, attractive blonde man takes the stand.
Mr. Slade, how did you meet Mrs. Forrester?
I played tennis with her at the club.
And you became friends?
She liked me. I liked her a lot, too. It went on from there.
You had an intimate sexual relationship with Mrs. Forrester?
Sam enters.
Yes.
For how long?
Sam talks to Teddy.
Let's see, I got to the club in November of 83 until the time she died.
You knew Mrs. Forrester was married?
Sure. That didn't seem to bother her, though.
What do you mean?
She said he didn't care what she did.
Objection is to form.
Sustained.
Did she ever talk to you about her relationship with her husband?
Objection, hearsay.
Your Honor, I'm trying to establish the state of mind of Mrs. Forrester prior to her murder.
The testimony is irrelevant.
I think I can establish the relevancy of the testimony.
You may proceed.
Mr. Slade, did she ever speak to you about her relationship with her husband?
She said he didn't care what she did.
Move to strike, Your Honor.
Motion denied.
Please continue.
She said she knew he was seeing someone, too. Whoever he was seeing, Paige said he'd take her riding all the time.
Riding?
Yeah, she joked about it. She said those horses of his were, foreplay.
Mr. Slade, did Mrs. Forrester ever talk to you about divorcing her husband?
She was thinking about it. She said the only thing that stopped her from getting a divorce before is that he was doing such a good job running the company. She said he had a million-dollar image. I remember once she said that she knew he was using her, but she said she was using him too. She said that was his special talent. Really knew how to use people.
Witness.
Krasny glances at Teddy disdainfully. She looks frozen.
Due to the lateness of the hour, we'll adjourn and reconvene at 9 o'clock Monday morning.
Well, that's it. It's over.
Krasny's colleague. Teddy moves slowly and deliberately, packing up her notes, shell-shocked. Later, Teddy parks the car and gets out.
You didn't think he'd find out?
Jack follows her, leaving his briefcase on the car bonnet.
Four years ago, I walked away from all this. I felt that I was drowning, over my head, the dirt, the slime.
He stands apart, watching her.
You played me. You played me so well. You set me up from the very beginning. How did you find out about Stiles? That's why you wanted me to defend you.
No, what are you talking about?
If you told me about Avery, I wouldn't have taken the case.
I had an affair with somebody. That doesn't mean I killed my wife. Teddy, I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you in the beginning. Well, that's why, because you wouldn't have taken the case. Later on, I...
What?
Well, I couldn't, because then you wouldn't have thought we were real.
You lied to me.
I had to lie to you. Don't you understand? I had to lie to you.
She shakes her head.
Teddy, that stuff about Paige, I didn't know anything about it.
I didn't want to be used anymore. I gave all this up because I wanted to clean myself off. I'm dropping the case.
You can't. It's my life. It's my life. You can't. I didn't kill her.
Teddy looks frightened in his tight grip as they search each other's faces. Eventually, she backs away towards the car.
I don't believe you.
His briefcase lies on the ground. He stands in the middle of the empty parking lot, motionless. Teddy pulls over and cries. Later, she enters her office where Sam sits with a glass of scotch. She walks towards him, staring, smiling.
What does he say?
I told you.
I don't want to hear it.
She goes to her desk.
We got another letter from the 1942 Corona.
Teddy ignores the paper Sam holds up and picks up something from her desk. She quickly puts it back down and walks out without a word to Sam, leaving him alone in her office. Later, she approaches a large brick house set high on a hill with a view of San Francisco below. Her arms folded, her long brown coat wrapped tightly around her. A gentle wind blows her blonde hair. She hesitates before climbing the steps to the front door of the columned entrance.
I'm sorry to disturb you, Your Honor.
The judge.
It's against all better judgment for me to speak with you.
Please, Your Honor.
He nods, and she goes into the house. In his study.
Did this hypothetical client confess his guilt to his hypothetical lawyer?
She shakes her head.
Then the defense counsel has no real ethical dilemma. He took an oath. He must live up to that oath.
What if he finds that he can't?
And then he had no business taking the oath in the first place.
What if someone came to you under circumstances like these and asked to be dropped from a case?
I probably would accede to his or her wishes, but with great regret.
Teddy is crying. Later, at her house, Sam bursts in.
Teddy! Teddy! Sitting in the dark. You playing with yourself?
He goes to her, sitting on the floor in her dressing gown at the top of the stairs.
Everything okay? You're gonna love what we got on Bobby Slade.
He crouches, handing her an envelope.
What the hell's the matter with you? Come on, read it.
She looks up at him.
Hey, are you okay?
She nods.
No. You're not okay. You look like shit.
He hugs her tenderly, rubbing her head, kissing it.
I'm sorry, kid.
The next day in court.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Superior Court for the County of San Francisco is now in session. The Honorable Clark Carrigan presides.
Will counsel please approach the bench?
Tom Krasny and Teddy walk to the judge's bench.
Do you have anything you want to say to me, Ms. Marsh?
Tom looks at her.
Yes, Your Honor. The defense would like to recall Bobby Slade.
The judge watches her skeptically as they return to their seats.
Recall Robert Slade.
Mr. Slade, where were you employed before coming to the Hillsborough Country Club?
At the Oceanside Racquet Club in Santa Cruz.
And what were the circumstances under which you left there?
I don't understand.
I think you do. You were fired, were you not, Mr. Slade?
No, I got a better job offer from Hillsborough.
Isn't it true, Mr. Slade, that you were fired in Santa Cruz for selling sexual favors?
That's not true.
Perjury is a criminal offense, Mr. Slade.
Objection, Your Honor.
I presume you know the penalty for committing perjury, Mr. Slade.
That's what they said. But there's no proof. There's nothing on my record. I wasn't fired. I left.
During the course of your intimate sexual relationship with Mrs. Forrester, where did you have sex with her?
Motels, the house in Hillsborough, down at the beach house.
The house in Baker Beach?
Yes.
Where the murders took place. Did Mrs. Forrester ever pay you for having sex with her?
She was a beautiful woman. She didn't have to pay anybody.
What kind of sex did you have with her?
What do you mean?
Did you tie her up?
Objection, Your Honor.
So
Sustained.
You fucking bitch.
What did you call me?
Your Honor, I object.
Denied.
What did you call me, Mr. Slade? You called me a bitch. Is that what you called me, Mr. Slade?
Speak up, Mr. Slade.
Yes.
Teddy looks pointedly at the jury.
No further questions, Your Honor.
No questions.
Teddy confers with Sam, who's just come in.
The people call Anthony Fabrizi.
Teddy and Sam look pleased as Fabrizi begins his testimony.
It was a 6-inch hunting knife with jags on the edge.
And what locker was it in?
It was in locker number 122.
And whose locker is that?
It was Mr. Forrest's locker.
Mr. Fabrizi, are you absolutely certain that the knife that you saw on January 2nd, 1984 was in Mr. Forrester's locker?
Yes, I am certain.
Your witness.
No questions.
Krasny's surprised. So is Jack.
The people rest.
That will be all, Mr. Fabrizi. Are you ready to call your first witness, Ms. Barnes?
I am, Your Honor. We call Dwayne Bendix.
Krasny's taken by surprise.
Mr. Bendix, were you a member of the Hillsborough Country Club on January 2nd, 1984?
Yes, I was.
Mr. Bendix, was there a knife on that date in your locker at the country club?
There was.
What kind of knife was it?
It was a hunting knife with a 6-inch blade and a jagged edge.
Teddy picks up a knife from her table and holds it aloft for the jury to see before walking with it to Mr. Bendix.
Is this the knife?
He examines it.
Yes, it is.
And Mr. Bendix, what was your locker number at the club?
222.
No further questions. Your witness, Mr. Krasny?
No questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bendix.
Your Honor, we would like to recall Anthony Fabrizi.
Fabrizi retakes the stand as Teddy watches him holding the knife.
Mr. Fabrizi, I'd like to remind you that you are still under oath.
Thank you, Judge.
Teddy puts the knife down, leaning towards Fabrizi.
Mr. Fabrizi, are you certain beyond any doubt the knife you saw was in locker 122 and not in locker 222?
No, it was in locker 122. I remember because I put it together in my head as I walked away from it that it was Mr. Forrester's.
Where was Mr. Bendix's locker in relationship to Mr. Forrester's?
Well, it was in the row right behind his.
Mr. Fabrizi, does this look like the knife that you saw that day?
He takes it and examines it carefully, turning it over in his hands.
No, this one's different.
How is it different?
Well, same kind of knife, all right, but no, this one here's all scratched up in the sides and the handle's all worn.
Mr. Fabrizi, if this knife was brand new and hadn't been used for over a year and a half, would it look like the knife you saw? Could it have been the knife you saw, Mr. Fabrizi? Is it possible, Mr. Fabrizi?
Oh, Jesus Christ, I don't know. Yes, it's possible.
She smiles.
Your Honor, I would like this knife marked and admitted into evidence as Defense Exhibit B. Your witness.
Mr. Fabrizi...
What? What the hell are you going to ask me now? I told her, it looks different. I don't know. If it was brand new, sure. It's possible it was the one I seen. I don't know how the hell I could have mistaken the locker numbers. I don't know.
No questions.
Krasny's not happy.
Thank you, Mr. Fabrizi. That's all. You will adjourn and reconvene again tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock.
Can I talk to you?
There's nothing to talk about.
I tried calling you all weekend and went over to your place. You still think I'm guilty?
How can you defend me if you think I'm guilty?
It happens all the time. It's the way our legal system works.
Jack watches her as she walks away, then sighs. In the dark and deserted underground parking lot, Teddy approaches her car.
I bet you're a cold fuck.
Bobby Slade steps out of the shadows.
What do you want, Mr. Slade?
You really think you're something, don't you? You twist everything around, don't you? You just don't give a shit. I bet I could warm you up. I bet I could make you real hot.
She presses the horn. Slade backs off, holding the car door open for a moment as Teddy tries to slam it. He watches her, chewing gum slowly as she speeds out of the car park. Later, alone in her office, she runs her hand through her hair, then picks up the phone.
Jen, hi. What are you doing? No, I'm at the office. I just wanted to call. Why don't you get David to watch Spider-Man while you do your homework? Okay.
While she's talking, she picks up and reads a note.
Why don't we talk about that when I get home, okay? All right. I love you. Bye-bye.
She studies the typed note more closely. It says, "He is innocent, Santa Cruz, January 21st, 1984. Ask Julie Jen," typed slightly above the other letters. Teddy drives to Santa Cruz. She visits a house where a pretty woman opens the door.
Julie Jensen? I'd like to talk to you, please. My name is Teddy.
I know who you are.
She bites her lip and, opening the door, signals Teddy to come into her home by the ocean.
Barnes, call your next witness.
Your Honor, we call Julie Jensen.
Greg Arnold looks nervously at Krasny.
Ms. Jensen, where do you reside?
At 1326 Del Mar Lane in Santa Cruz.
Would you describe for us, please, the events which took place on the night of January 21st, 1984.
Objection, Your Honor. This testimony is not relevant.
This testimony is directly related to the crimes Jack Forrester is accused of, and Mr. Krasny knows it.
The witness may continue.
I was in my bedroom. I woke up. There was a knife at my throat. There was a man there. He was dressed in black, all black. Pants, turtleneck. He wore a black ski mask. I never saw his face.
Objection, Your Honor. This crime is not relevant to this case.
Overruled.
He kept the knife pressed to my throat. It was a big knife. It had these jags on the top. He tied my hands and my legs to the bed. He cut my nightgown off of me.
She holds her stomach.
What did he do then?
He pushed the knife against my nipples. And he cut me.
How did he cut you?
She looks pleadingly at Teddy.
He cut around my right nipple with the tip of the knife. And then he smeared the knife with the blood. And he got up and he wrote it on the wall.
What did he write?
He wrote the word bitch.
Jack looks away, shaking his head.
Then he came back to the bed. And he started putting the knife between my legs. But he didn't cut me. And then he suddenly stopped. And he went away. And these events took place at your beach house in Santa Cruz on January 21st, 1984, 18 months before the murders at Baker Beach. Yes. Well done.
Teddy pats Julie's hand.
Ms. Jensen, did you ever relate these events to anyone from the San Francisco District Attorney's office?
Your Honor, that is irrelevant.
Overruled.
Yes, I did. To that man there. To this man? Mr. Arnold, an assistant district attorney.
Yes.
When did you relate these events to him?
He came to see me 3 weeks after Mrs. Forrester was killed, and he came back to see me 2 days later.
When Mr. Arnold came back to see you, what did he tell you?
He told me that the Baker Beach killings were not related to what happened to me.
Ms. Jensen, were you a member of the Oceanside Racquet Club in Santa Cruz from January to October 1983?
Yes.
Do you play tennis?
I did before this happened.
Did you ever play with the club's pro, Bobby Slade?
I object to
that. Yes!
Bobby Slade is not on trial here.
Why isn't he? You knew you hushed it up.
You are trying to mislead this jury, Teddy.
That is not
true.
That
is
not true.
I will see you both in chambers.
All I'm asking for is a 2-week continuance.
For what? To tie him into the Santa Cruz crime? He's had months to tie him into it. He can't. He's innocent, and you know it. And that's why he didn't turn over his statement to me.
How did you find her? How the hell did you find her? She kept her name out of the papers.
We saw the police report.
We pulled it.
You pulled the police report?
You breached the canon of ethics, Mr. Krasny. Now, your request is denied. If it were up to me, I'd vote to disbar you.
He told you, didn't he? He told you. What did he do? Did he phone you? Send you anonymous notes?
You'll stop at nothing, won't you? Anyone could have sent those notes. Everyone knew. The police in Santa Cruz knew. People at your office knew.
Bullshit! Don't you understand what he did? He did the identical crime 18 months before he murdered his wife. He knew it would get him off the hook. He knew Bobby Slade was seeing his wife. That's why he did the first crime in Santa Cruz. He threw us Bobby Slade as a suspect. He picked that woman very carefully. He knew she played tennis with Slade. He planned this for 18 months. He is not a psychopath. He is an Iceman. He is a monster.
She shakes her head slowly.
You're the monster, Tom.
If you make any attempt to implicate Mr. Forrester in the Santa Cruz crime, I shall strike it. He is not charged with that offense.
The courtroom is empty except for one man reading a newspaper. The jury is out, deciding the verdict. In a separate room, Jack sits on a desk, staring at nothing, waiting. Teddy sits across the room. She gets up and moves to him, holding his hand. As Sam enters, he pulls his hand away.
They're in.
Teddy and Jack sit waiting as the courtroom refills and the jury files in.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
We have, Your Honor.
The jury foreman hands a folded paper to the bailiff, who carries it to the judge. The The judge reads it, glancing up briefly, then hands it back to the bailiff as Teddy and Jack watch nervously. The bailiff then takes it to the clerk of the court, who reads it to himself and stands. Jack and Teddy also stand.
Not guilty.
Teddy and Jack hug each other tightly.
Stand in recess.
Do you have any kind of
As the courtroom bursts into activity and Jack is congratulated by colleagues, Teddy looks around for a moment, then focuses on a disappointed-looking district attorney and his deputy.
I'd like to say something, please. I'd like to say something, please. 4 years ago, I resigned my job as an assistant district attorney. I'd like to tell you why. I prosecuted a case with Mr. Krasny. It was a very newsworthy case. The kind of case that wins elections, makes careers. We convicted the man, and he went to jail. A week after the trial, I discovered that during the trial, one of our investigators had come up with evidence which would have exonerated the man we were prosecuting, and that Mr. Krasny had buried that evidence. Although I found...
She sees Henry Stiles' mother sitting in the courtroom.
I didn't do anything. I didn't tell anyone. I let that man... He hanged himself in prison.
Krasny and his deputy listen along with the rest of the courtroom.
I will have to learn to live with that. Somehow.
Stiles' mother nods slowly.
The people versus Henry Stiles. Case number 26022.
Krasny sneers.
Did you have any comment on that?
Tom Krasny quickly leaves the courtroom, besieged by reporters. He pauses at the door, stares malevolently at Teddy, and nods. Teddy returns his stare as he leaves. Later, she descends the enormous staircase in City Hall. Near the bottom, one of her law partners stops her.
Your partners are very proud of you.
They shake hands and Teddy leaves him, staring after her. On the steps of City Hall, Jack is talking to reporters.
Couldn't have happened without Teddy Barnes.
Teddy walks past them, head down, then turns to look at Jack, surrounded by reporters. As Teddy walks up her front steps, the kids are waiting at the window for her.
Congratulations!
Matthew hugs and kisses all round.
What's going on?
Well, we're going to my house for a couple of days and give you a chance to celebrate.
But I don't have anybody to celebrate with except you guys.
Well, yes, you do. Come on, you guys. Let's go.
As Matthew and the kids leave, Teddy's attention turns to the TV.
I think more than anything else, today's verdict has been a terrific vindication of our legal system. It couldn't have happened without Teddy Barnes. I'll never be able to thank her. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Forrester. That, as you know, is Jack Forrester. He was just found not guilty of those brutal murders of his wife and her maid. That's the situation here.
And this word just into the Channel 7 newsroom. Police are now seeking Hillsborough Country Club tennis pro Bobby Slade for questioning in the Baker Beach killings. We'll have full details and a film report at 11 o'clock.
Teddy grins to herself. Later, as she arrives at Jack's, he opens the front door. She runs to him, jumping up and hugging him. The next morning dawns brightly. Teddy awakens in Jack's luxurious Spanish-style hacienda and gets out of bed, pulling on a black Japanese kimono. She rises from the bed, and hearing Jack's voice, she pads across a carpeted floor to a sliding door and opens it. Stepping onto a tiled balcony, she sees Jack talking to someone on the lawn below.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
What time is it?
The time is 3:30. Are you hungry?
I'm starving.
Good, I made some brunch down there for us. I'm going to go to the stables. I'll be back in 10, 15 minutes. You know how I feel? I feel free. Free!
She watches Jack's triumphant cheer delightedly, then goes back into the bedroom, smiling to herself as she moves to the bed and strips the sheets off. She carries the bundle to a hamper in a walk-in linen closet and stuffs the linens in. Turning to a shelf, she takes down some clean sheets, then reaches up for more. A pile tumbles down onto the floor. She looks up at the shelf. Behind the spot where the sheets had rested sits an old manual typewriter. She stands on tiptoe, looking more closely. She slides the black typewriter off the shelf. It's an old Corona. She places it on the bed and contemplates it a moment before turning to a bedside table. She opens a drawer, finds some paper, and inserts a sheet, glancing nervously at the door. She types. "He is innocent," she types, pausing before hitting the final T. She hits it. The T rests above the line. Her expression betrays realization, quickly followed by panic. Dressed, she runs for her car, clutching her raincoat to her chest. She gets in quickly, placing her raincoat on the passenger seat. Under it is the typewriter. She tries to start the car. Jack pulls up.
Where are you going?
Oh, it's David. He has a fever. I've got to go home.
Oh, no. Go on, Ed. What's the matter with him?
I don't know. Matthew called.
Well, I'll come with you.
No. I'll call.
Here, let me try.
She glances at the raincoat. A bit of the typewriter is showing, but Jack's right there watching. She gets out. He smiles up at her.
Can I at least kiss you goodbye?
He grabs her head and kisses her. She ends the kiss quickly and gets into the car. Puzzled by her behavior, he leans in the window, smiling at her. She ignores him and takes off. He watches her, sighing, as her car disappears quickly down his long, winding drive. Teddy, racing, lets herself into her house and leaves the typewriter on the stairs, running up. She tears off her shirt, still running. She stands under a steaming shower, vigorously scrubbing herself. Now, alone in the kitchen in a white terry dressing gown and still wet hair, she looks warily at the phone. She walks slowly towards it, and finally, hesitantly, she picks it up. She listens, her face emotionless like a mask.
He's fine.
Well, what's the matter with him?
I've... Nothing.
Come on, you said he had a fever.
I found the typewriter.
What typewriter? What are you talking about?
You killed her.
What is the matter with you? Teddy, I love you. Listen to me.
No.
Look,
no.
I'm on my way over.
No. No!
She slams the phone down and rests her head on her arm. The empty staircase in Teddy's house. Her face goes stony again.
What is it? Teddy, for Christ's sake, what is it?
Nothing. I just wanted to... I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank me? What the fuck you got?
I don't want to hear about Bobby Slade.
Is she all right? Sure you don't want me to come over there?
No. No, nothing's wrong. It's all right now. Bye, Sam.
A sad smile crosses her face. She leaves the kitchen, headed for the stairs. A white-gloved hand reaches through a broken pane in the kitchen door and carefully unlocks the lock. A figure dressed all in black, wearing a ski cap, carrying a knife. Walking through the kitchen into the hall, the phone is taken off the hook. Up the stairs and heading down the hallway towards Teddy's bedroom. A white-gloved hand on the doorknob. The door opens. The figure comes in, looking around. It stops short. Teddy is sitting up in bed with the light on, one hand beneath the blanket. She looks towards the figure, who begins to advance. Rope is pulled from a back pocket.
I need to see your face, Jack.
Rope is wound round the gloved hand, tied into a knot.
I could have loved...
He grabs her and she shoots. The attacker falls backward, sitting. Struggling to stand. The struggling ends. The body lies still on the carpet. Teddy drops her arms and watches, then leans forward, resting her head on her arm. She drops the gun. She looks up as someone runs up the stairs towards her.
Jesus Christ!
Sam runs in, gun drawn. He steps on the hand still holding the knife, then kicks the body onto its back. He bends over it, flinging the other arm onto the floor. He clutches the edge of the ski mask, then looks long and hard at Teddy, who's staring down at the body. He pulls it up. Teddy slowly raises her gaze to see Jack, his mouth open, his eyes staring at her. Sam goes to her and gently lifts her chin, looking her in the eye.
Fuck him. They was trash.
He nods at her and a small, slow smile lights her face as their eyes stay locked. He nods again and she walks away from him, leaving the room. Sam follows. A jagged-edged hunting knife rests loosely in a bloody white-gloved hand.
Next on War 4,
the film starred Glenn Close as Teddy, Jeff Bridges as Jack, Robert Loggia as Sam, Peter Coyote as Tom Krasny, John Daner as Judge Carrigan, Lee Taylor Young as Virginia Howell, Diane Erickson as Eileen Avery, Marshall Colt as Bobby Slade, Louis Giambalvo as Fabrizi, Brandon Call as David, and Christina Hutter as Jenny Barnes. ITFC audio description was by Gloria Hattrick.